So imagine you are paying, hundreds of dollars an hour to sit on a clinical psychologist's couch.
Oh, yeah, which is already a pretty stressful situation to be in.
Right, exactly. And you are just completely exhausted. You and your spouse, you spend this entire first session unloading your absolute frustration about your 22-year-old son.
Okay, setting the stage here.
Yeah. So he's moved back home. He's taken up permanent residence in your basement, and he spends his entire day just playing video games.
Sounds a bit familiar for a lot of people, I'm sure.
Probably. I mean,
Yeah.
he refuses to look for a job. He refuses to help around the house at all.
Wow.
And you explain to the therapist that the only time you actually see him is when he occasionally emerges from like the subterranean depths just to assemble a peanut butter and jelly sandwich before vanishing again.
Just a quick supply run.
Right. So you lay all of this out, you're desperate for a solution, and then you look at Dr. Henry Cloud and you ask, well, how do we fix him?
Because clearly the kid is broken.
Right. That's what you think. But the therapist looks back at you, completely deadpan, and says, your son doesn't have a problem.
Which is honestly the exact moment most parents would demand a refund and just walk right out the door.
I mean, I would. It sounds completely insulting, but that punchline, which is actually how Pastor Kent Wagner opened his sermon this past weekend at Harmony Christian Church, that's the core of what we are unpacking today.
Yeah, because the therapist goes on to explain that the son is actually perfectly content.
He's having a great time.
Right. The parents are the ones experiencing the pain and the financial strain and the profound frustration, all because they have taken their son's responsibilities and just kind of absorbed them as their own.
Exactly. So the son doesn't have a problem. The parents have a boundary problem.
Massive boundary problem.
And if you are joining us today as a fellow member of Harmony, gearing up for your Connect group this week, that is exactly what we're dissecting in this deep dive. We're getting into Pastor Kent's message, Margins of Mercy, setting godly boundaries.
It's such a crucial topic.
Right.
And that basement gamer story, it perfectly illustrates the mechanism of what happens when a really fundamental law of human relationships is broken.
It does, yeah, because we toss the word around a lot, right?
We do. We treat boundaries like they're some modern pop psychology buzzword,
Yeah.
like some self-help trend that involves taking a bubble bath and putting your phone on airplane mode.
Self-care, yeah.
Right. But at its core, a boundary is actually just a physical or conceptual limit that marks a division. I mean, it defines property lines.
Like a fence in a backyard.
Exactly. It establishes where my yard ends and your yard begins, which consequently dictates what I am responsible for versus what you are responsible for.
And when you just erase those property lines entirely, you don't actually get absolute freedom. You just get profound anxiety.
Now, absolute chaos.
Right. Think about the feeling of accepting a job where the company never actually provides you with a job
Oh,
description.
that sounds like a nightmare.
Doesn't it? I mean, at first, maybe it sounds liberating, like, hey, I can do whatever I want. But very quickly, you realize you are living in a landscape of pure chaos.
Because if you have no defined responsibilities,
Anyone in that company can demand anything from you at any given moment. You have no metric for success. You have no way to know if you're failing, and you have absolutely no mechanism to say no without feeling super guilty.
Yeah, the lack of a boundary doesn't create teamwork in that scenario. It just manufactures resentment.
Exactly.
Because taking on the consequences of someone else's behavior, it inevitably drains you. And Pastor Kent gave us that highly visceral image of the Chinese restaurant to really drive this home.
Oh my gosh, the Chinese restaurant story. That was amazing.
It was so vivid. He talked about a family sitting a few tables over, completely devoid of any behavioral boundaries for their toddlers.
The kids were just running the show.
They were essentially dictating the terms of reality in that room. It's practically raining fried rice across the dining room. The kids are throwing handfuls of food everywhere, and the parents are just paralyzed.
They're just sitting there.
Just helplessly sitting there, offering crab rangoon to tiny dictators.
Tiny dictators. I mean, the phrase chaos reigns just completely comes to mind. It's funny in this kind of horrifying sort of way, but it absolutely proves the point. Without a dividing line of authority and responsibility, the system just collapses.
It completely collapses. And that collapse points to a much deeper theological reality that Pastor Kent brought up. Because boundary setting is actually baked right into the architecture of the universe.
Yeah, the Psalm 74 reference,
Right,
right?
exactly. In Psalm 74, the writer is looking at the physical world and says to God, "It was you who set all the boundaries of the earth. You made both summer and winter."
So it's not a modern invention.
Not at all. Look at the Genesis creation account. God doesn't just materialize objects into a void. He actually brings order out of absolute chaos by engaging in acts of division.
Right, separating things.
Yeah, he separates the light from the darkness.
Yeah.
He separates the land from the sea. The mechanism of creation involves drawing firm lines because order literally requires division.
Okay, but here is where things get tricky, right? Because that craving for order, it creates a new danger.
It does.
Once we realize that boundaries can give us peace and kind of protect us from that chaos, our survival instinct kicks in.
I think they get way too far.
Way too far. We start using those boundaries not as property lines to manage our relationships, but as weapons to permanently isolate ourselves.
Which brings us to that really tragic narrative Pastor Kent shared.
Yeah, about the young woman from his past. Her story is just, it's a textbook example of how a legitimate need for protection can warp into like a prison of your own making.
It's heartbreaking.
It really is. She grew up in a completely horrific environment. We're talking about severe abuse, where words like home and dad didn't mean safety at all. They were just triggers for terror.
Right, just pure trauma.
Yeah. But eventually she escaped that environment.
Yeah.
And she found Christ, and her wider family actually started experiencing some real change. And there was this period of incredible growth for her.
Which is amazing.
It was. But then, years later, she posted this really lengthy explanation on Facebook announcing that she was walking away from her faith entirely.
Wow.
And her reasoning was that Christianity's mandate to, you know, forgive everyone and turn the other cheek, she felt it was just a setup for her to be trampled on and abused all over again.
Which, obviously, is a profound misreading of Scripture.
Yeah.
But from a clinical psychological standpoint, it is a completely understandable defense mechanism for a trauma survivor.
Oh, 100%. So she sought out a therapist, and the therapist gave her what is basically the classic modern advice. They said, you know, when are you going to take care of you? You need to choose yourself.
The modern mantra.
Right. So she did. She established these impenetrable walls. The moment anyone crossed a line or made her uncomfortable or triggered any negative emotion, they were just cut out entirely.
Just gone.
Gone. She went on this crusade to purge all the toxicity from her life.
And that is exactly the weaponization of the boundary. And we have to pause here, I think, because this specific narrative, this idea that any discomfort equals toxicity, that just must be excised, that is the dominant cultural liturgy right now.
It's everywhere. And I think this is where we really have to wrestle with a very real tension, especially as you guys prepare to discuss this in your Connect groups this week.
Yeah, it's a tricky balance.
Because on one hand, we just established that letting kids throw fried rice across a restaurant or letting a grown adult drain your resources from the basement is super destructive.
It's definitely destructive.
And Pastor Kent was explicitly clear on this too. If you are dealing with an actual abuser, you do not compromise. You build a brick wall.
You do not leave your children with an abusive relative in the name of being nice.
Absolutely not. But if we are supposed to protect ourselves from destructive behavior, why is this young woman's decision to aggressively cut people off presented as a tragedy? Like, what's the difference?
Well, the distinction really lies in the underlying motivation. It's the difference between a secular boundary and a godly boundary.
Oh, okay. Break that down for us.
So the secular model of boundary setting completely removes God from the equation, and it replaces him with the self. It operates on the core philosophy that you are the center of the universe.
Right.
Therefore, the boundary begins and ends entirely with your own desires, your own comfort, and your own self-actualization.
It kind of turns protecting yourself into an absolute religion where you're the deity.
Precisely. You are the God of that system. And if you elevate yourself to the center of the universe, you will inevitably have to cut off anyone who challenges you or inconveniences you or honestly just holds a different perspective.
Which we see all the time.
Constantly. Pastor Kent pointed out that phenomenon of young adults completely severing ties with their parents. And not because of a history of abuse, but simply because the parents hold a different political ideology.
Yeah, he mentioned that and stayed totally neutral on the politics themselves, but just pointed out the behavior.
Exactly. When a boundary is purely self-centered, it lacks the elasticity required for human grace. It doesn't lead to peace. It leads to an echo chamber of one.
An echo chamber of one. Wow.
That young woman from his past, she just kept digging a moat to keep out the invaders. And she eventually woke up to realize she had built herself an inescapable prison of isolation.
So if the secular approach of making ourselves the center just leaves us stranded on an island, we obviously need a better model.
We go.
We need to look at how Jesus actually navigated this. And honestly, this is where the cultural caricature of Jesus gets completely shattered.
Oh, completely.
Pastor Kent brought up how we tend to view Jesus through this highly filtered, really sanitized lens. Like, we picture him as this cosmic Santa Claus who just wants to give you presents.
Or Mr. Rogers on steroids.
Yes, Mr. Rogers on steroids. Just a soft-spoken guy in a cardigan who never raised his voice and unconditionally affirmed absolutely everything everyone did.
It's a comforting image, for sure, but it's completely disconnected from the biblical text. I mean, if God is the architect of boundaries, as we saw back in creation, then the incarnation of God is going to exhibit some incredibly sharp edges.
The psychological shock of reading Jesus' actual words is pretty intense sometimes. Like, look at Matthew chapter 10. Jesus looks at his followers and he says, "Do not suppose that I have come to bring peace to the earth. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword."
And we love the idea of Jesus the peacemaker.
You do. But a sword is a tool designed specifically for severing things.
It is the ultimate boundary-setting instrument. Jesus is establishing a surgical division there. He isn't promoting some vague, hippie kingdom of universal tolerance. He's drawing a definitive line in the sand.
Forcing a choice.
Exactly. You're either aligning with his kingdom or you are stepping outside of it. The boundary is absolute, and we see him enforce that boundary with staggering intensity in Matthew 23.
Oh man, Matthew 23, that's the chapter Pastor Kent compared to a UFC fight.
Such a great comparison.
Jesus is standing in front of the Pharisees. These are the religious, political, and cultural elite of his day, and he just verbally dismantles them. He calls them hypocrites, blind guides, whitewashed tombs full of dead men's bones.
He does not hold back.
Well.
But what's vital to understand about Matthew 23 is why Jesus is drawing such an aggressive boundary.
Right. He's not just pitching a fit.
No. Well, he isn't lashing out because his feelings were hurt. He's attacking the Pharisees because they were using their own religious boundaries to lock vulnerable people out of the kingdom of God.
Well,
while internally they were completely rotting.
Right.
Jesus sets an impenetrable, aggressive boundary against religious hypocrisy.
So how do we balance that? Because John 1:17 really seems to be the theological key to understanding how Jesus operates here. John writes, "For the law was given through Moses, grace and truth came through Jesus Christ."
That verse is the whole blueprint.
It really is. It sounds like Moses provided the diagnosis, like the stark reality of the disease, but Jesus brought the actual mechanism for the cure.
That is a really profound way to look at it.
Yeah.
Because Moses brought the law, right? And the law is pure truth. Truth is a rigid, unyielding standard. It's binary. It's right and wrong, black and white.
No gray area.
None. And the inherent problem with pure truth is that human beings are just incapable of perfectly adhering to it. It eventually crushes everyone under its weight.
We just can't measure up.
We can't. But Jesus steps into history embodying not just that perfect truth, but simultaneously embodying perfect grace. Mm. And grace is the mechanism of unmerited favor. It is receiving profound acceptance that you objectively did not earn.
Like getting the ice cream cone, even when you threw a tantrum.
Exactly.
I think of it kind of like the engine of a car.
Okay, run with that.
So truth is the solid metal engine block. It's rigid, it's heavy, and it provides the necessary structure and containment for the combustion happening inside.
Okay, the boundaries.
Right. But if you try to run an engine with just the metal block and no oil, the friction of all those moving parts grinding against each other will generate so much heat that the engine will literally seize up and destroy itself.
Which is truth without grace.
Exactly. That's truth without grace. But grace is the oil. It lubricates the system, cools the friction, allows the parts to move together. However, if you just have a puddle of oil without the solid metal block of truth to contain it, you don't have an engine.
No, you definitely don't.
You just have a slippery mess on the driveway that produces absolutely no forward momentum.
That mechanical relationship is exactly what we have to replicate in our own lives, the block and the oil. And to help us figure out our own default settings for our Connect Group discussions, Pastor Kent gave the church a really helpful diagnostic litmus test.
Yes, the workplace test.
Because human nature dictates that we naturally lean toward either the metal block or the oil. We're rarely balanced.
Totally. So the scenario is this. Imagine you manage a team and you have an employee who is chronically underperforming. They show up late. They miss deadlines. They drag the team down.
A nightmare employee.
Right. So you put them on a formal performance improvement plan. And they manage to scrape by for 30 days. But the minute the plan ends, they immediately revert back to their old lazy habits.
Typical.
So what is your immediate physiological gut reaction? Do you want to fire them on the spot, escort them out of the building, and protect the company? Or do you want to pull them into your office, try to figure out what's going wrong in their personal life, and give them one more chance?
It's a great test. Because if your immediate instinct is to fire them, you're naturally wired for truth.
You are the engine block.
You see the boundary, you see the violation, and you demand the consequence. But if your instinct is to give them another shot, you are wired for grace. You're the oil. You prioritize the relationship and the potential over the immediate standard.
And neither default is entirely wrong.
No, but neither can operate successfully in isolation.
So let's talk to the truth people first. If your default is the metal engine block, if you have zero problem cutting people off, saying no, and enforcing the rules, your mechanism is going to create a lot of friction.
A ton of friction. Pastor Kim pointed out that truth without grace crushes people. It creates a culture of fear.
Yeah, nobody wants to work or live under that.
Right. And to counteract that, truth people really need to study the psychological mechanism of what Jesus did with Zacchaeus.
Oh, the wee little man.
The wee little man. Zacchaeus was the chief tax collector in Jericho. He was a wealthy, corrupt extortionist who leveraged the power of the Roman Empire to steal from his own neighbors.
A really bad guy.
Very bad. So when Jesus passes through town, Zacchaeus climbs a tree just to get a look. Now, pure truth demanded that Jesus march over to that tree, publicly expose every dime Zacchaeus had stolen, and condemn him.
And the crowd would have absolutely loved that. They wanted the execution of truth.
They were ready for it. Because truth demands compliance through fear and shame. But you know what that usually does? It usually just causes people to hide their behavior more effectively.
True.
But Jesus utilizes the mechanism of grace. He looks up at this corrupt thief and says, "Come down, because I'm going to your house for dinner."
Which was scandalous.
Completely scandalous. By offering unearned acceptance and breaking bread with an outcast, Jesus completely short-circuits the shame reflex. Zacchaeus isn't transformed because a rigid boundary was forced upon him by an angry mob. He is transformed because the shocking absence of condemnation provides him the psychological safety to voluntarily enforce the boundary on himself.
He immediately promises to pay back four times what he stole.
Exactly. Truth people have to realize that grace is often the catalyst that makes truth palatable.
Man, that's powerful. Now, on the flip side, we have the grace people. And I will freely admit, this is where I struggle. And Pastor Kent confessed it's his natural battleground, too.
It's hard for a lot of us.
It is. When you default to grace, you operate under the delusion that love always has to look nice.
Yeah.
You avoid setting boundaries because you fear creating conflict or causing someone else pain.
But failing to set a boundary out of a desire to be nice is actually a failure to love.
This is where that boiling water analogy hits so incredibly hard.
Oh, yeah.
If you are standing in your kitchen and there is a pot of boiling water on the stove with the handle jutting out over the edge.
Just waiting for a disaster.
Exactly. And your toddler reaches up to grab it. You don't like drop to one knee and softly say, "Honey, let's explore your feelings about this pot. Please reconsider touching that."
No, absolutely not. You smack their hand away with actual physical force and you tackle them to the kitchen floor.
You do. And from the toddler's perspective, that action is incredibly violent. It doesn't feel nice.
They're probably terrified.
They might scream. They might cry. They might look at you like you are the enemy because you just caused them physical and emotional shock. But tackling them is the most profoundly loving action you could possibly take in that microsecond.
You're saving them from third-degree burns.
Exactly. Grace people have to recognize that enforcing a hard boundary, saying a definitive no, and enduring someone's temporary anger is often the highest form of love. It requires stepping into the tension and just holding the line.
Which naturally transitions into a very specific challenge for the younger members of Harmony Christian Church, because learning to hold that line has to start early.
Absolutely. If you are a teenager listening to this to prep for your Youth Connect group, I really want to reiterate Pastor Kent's pushback directly to you.
Listen up, guys.
It is so easy to spend your teenage years constantly fighting against the boundaries your parents are setting. But you need to realize they are tackling you away from the boiling water.
They're trying to protect you.
They are. And more importantly, you need to transition from fighting their boundaries to establishing your own. You have to care about the architecture of your own mind and heart enough to say no to things voluntarily.
That's maturity.
It is. Pastor Kent shared how when he really started following Christ as a teenager, he made a personal decision to stop watching R-rated movies.
Wow.
His parents didn't force that rule on him. He established that boundary himself because he recognized that constantly consuming those images was fundamentally incompatible with the mind he was trying to build.
That's incredibly proactive.
You cannot rely on your parents' boundaries forever. Eventually, you have to take ownership of your own property lines.
So, as we synthesize all of this for your Connect groups this week, we really have to look at the ultimate solution for the madness and exhaustion in our lives. We are drained because we lack the ability to set firm, defined boundaries, especially within our own families.
We allow the demands of others to dictate our reality.
Exactly. But the solution is not to retreat into that secular model of self-love that we talked about earlier. Elevating yourself to the center of the universe might give you temporary relief from demands, but it is a mechanism that practically guarantees long-term isolation.
We have to anchor our boundaries not in the love of self, but in the love of God.
That is the only anchor that holds. When your boundaries are centered on God's love, the mechanism changes entirely. You realize that God values and loves you deeply, which gives you the permission to protect your own margins.
Right.
But you also realize that God fiercely loves the person across from you. And that dual recognition allows you to walk the incredibly narrow road of holding the engine block and the oil together.
Mm.
You can profoundly love and serve other people while simultaneously maintaining the healthy limits required to actually survive the journey.
And as members of Harmony, we really need to lean into the reassurance that Pastor Kent left us with at the end of the service. We've spent a lot of time today dismantling the idea that you are the center of the universe. But displacing yourself from the center doesn't mean you're insignificant.
Not at all.
God loves you with a depth and a ferocity that defies human logic. He knows the absolute worst parts of your internal monologue, the things you hide from everyone else, and he still pursues you with perfect grace.
That's beautiful.
It is, and that's why Pastor Kent had us all just sit in the sanctuary in silent prayer. He recalled challenging the elders a few months ago to strip away the polished religious language and just start praying by saying, Holy Spirit, you're real, right?
Such a raw way to pray.
We have to be willing to get into the messy, muddy waters with God about his love for us. Because deeply internalizing that love is the only foundation strong enough to support boundaries that bring life instead of isolation.
It is the only way to successfully embody both grace and truth.
So I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over before your Connect group meets this week. We have focused heavily on Pastor Kent's warning that truth without grace crushes people.
Right.
But I want you to reverse the equation. What does a church community look like if it operates entirely on grace without truth?
Oh, wow. That's a great question.
Does it just become a swamp of forced politeness where anything goes, where no standard is ever upheld and where no one is actually challenged to grow? Take a really honest inventory of your own default mechanism this week.
Are you the metal block or are you the oil?
Exactly. Ask yourself how that natural leaning is silently shaping the boundaries or the lack thereof in your closest relationships. Because until you understand what is drawn on your internal surveyor's map, you will just keep getting lost in your own backyard.
Couldn't have said better.
Have an incredible, challenging discussion in your Connect groups this week, and we will catch you on the next deep dive.